Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Motis, and I'm your host, a Filipina-American, native New Yorker, current California transplant, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you'll hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and role-emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. I invite you to receive a dose of OT inspiration, to learn, to think outside of the box, and to be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening. Before we begin this episode, I want to highlight and extend a special thanks to our sponsors, TrueLearn and PicMonic. PicMonic is an excellent learning resource and study aid for occupational therapy and occupational therapy assistant students, whether you're studying for your classes or getting ready for the NBCOT exam. PicMonic is the only visual mnemonic learning tool that has been research proven to increase retention and help students ace their exams through the use of audiovisual learning and intelligence-based repetition algorithms to help with long-term retention while studying. How I wish I had a learning tool like this back when I was in OT school. Try it for yourself and sign up today using the link in the show notes or code TRANSITIONSOT to score a discount of 20% off your PicMonic membership. Happy studying. Welcome back, OT friends. Today, I'm super excited to introduce you to our guest of honor, Dr. Sakshi Tikhu. Sakshi is an occupational therapist who specializes in sexuality. She is a brown, queer, chronically ill occupational therapist, sexuality counselor, and author of Sex Care. Sex Care is a self-help workbook designed for solo and partnered pleasure. She is originally from Mumbai, but is currently based in Perth, Australia. And she is also the brains behind Sex Love and OT. Sex Love and OT is a sex positive space for everyone to embrace their whole being while being respectful of everyone else's choices. The idea is to build a better ecosystem, a healthier community, and preparedness to voice and protect what matters to us and what we love. So without further ado, to tell us much more about her uncommon OT work, I'd like to present to you Dr. Sakshi Tikhu. Welcome, Sakshi.
Hey there. Thank you so much for having me and for finally being able to make this work on different time zones.
So yes, I'm so proud of us. I'm giving our me a pat on the back for not being on the wrong Zoom. Yes.
Oh my God. Yes. Time conversion is a skill and we'll face it someday.
It is. And thank you so much for taking the time. I know, again, we're on different time zones. Our listeners do not know this, but it's Saturday evening for me and Sunday morning for you over there in Australia. So I really appreciate you taking this time because I think it shows just how important this is, right? It's important for you to be on this platform, to be on the Uncommon OT Series podcast to share your work. We're profiling uncommon work in uncommon settings. And I think that the work that you do really portrays that. So I'm excited to hear a little bit more. But before we get to all of that, I'd love for you to just tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe a few of your favorite occupations.
I currently am a very basic person that way. When it comes to having favorite occupations, I definitely love reading. I love reading a lot. I love dancing. I am a trained classical dancer. I was working at it for like about 8 years and then I left, but I still got some moves in me. So I go into like random bouts of dancing, but it is like meditation for me. And I think there's definitely watching TV shows. I think it just brings a lot more perspective when I am not talking to humans or rather not choose to talk to humans. I think TV shows and movies bring a lot of perspective about how one person sees something, how relationships have evolved and so on. And I do not, I would like to say travel, but I am such a house mouse. But whenever I do, I love, I'm a mountain person, so I would love to go on a walk in any silent place, wherever, whichever thing has a mountain, wherever this mountain may be, which you will find me there. But I think these are some of my very basic and favorite occupations. Oh, I forgot the important one. I love to eat food. Anything, all cuisines. I can scrutinize, criticize, but ask me to cook and you've lost me. So, yeah, a person of basic needs.
Well, thanks for sharing that. How fun. Definitely, you and I spoke a little bit before we hit the record button, and you talked about travel for a moment, and I mentioned that you were from Mumbai but are currently based in Australia. Do you want to quickly share what that was all about?
I think people who know me and people who don't. I was always born, raised, spent my more than 2 decades in Mumbai, and completed my studies and worked there for 4 years. And then I don't know, everything, like you said, my little baby, which is Sex, Love, and OT. It's a dream project, always been in works. And I can be there for my clients and I can be there for other educators and professors and everybody else, but I still feel there is something that I probably do not know. And I'm not sure what that is. It's very hard to pinpoint. And for that very reason, I did want to continue my education further. And I didn't want it to just be another master's in occupational therapy. I have my reasons and reservations for it, but everyone else, please do whatever feels right for you. This decision felt right for me. So I'm not discouraging anyone. Disclaimer, please get your master's if you really want to. I have my reservations, like I said, but that's when I decided since, like you said, I have been specializing in sexuality and sexual wellness and rehabilitation and mental health. And so I wanted to make sure everything of that is streamlined towards that area. So I am getting my master's of sexology in Perth. So that's the reason why I have moved here, and to learn more. And I think it's also great because the cultural expansiveness and the change of that setting also brings in a lot more experiences and new learnings. So I think it's so much more nuanced than just getting a degree. I mean, even though we say that, but I think it's so much more nuanced than that. And I'm so looking forward to the journey.
Well, congratulations on this next chapter. I just feel like you've honed in, you've really honed in on what you want to kind of focus on for the next few years.
Oh yes. I mean, like you said, when we talk, I mean, I am on the Uncommon OT podcast. So that's the point of it. And I mean, when you say it's such an, like we were talking about it right before, it can be such a source of inspiration to so many of them. So back when all of these things just started with a stupid and a very simple Instagram account called a Sex, Love, and OT, where I was so frustrated that I couldn't talk about sexuality and occupational therapy in a single sentence without people looking at me, staring at me, giving me the eye. Or there's also another population where people were like, oh, that's interesting. How can we do that without, crossing the realm of occupational therapy, without stepping on someone else's profession, without not losing the essence of occupational therapy? And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And then I think that whole journey has been so amazing because as my experiences have grown, as my communication, networking with the world, thank God Zoom, so with the world has increased, it also highlighted that area that a lot of us are like the kind of work that I do is inspiring, but I also realized that it isn't enabling a greater change. Right. So inspiration is great, but I think people still feel helpless as to how do we proceed? What can we do? what's next? So even though there is that idea, it still lacks action. And I think a little bit of what I am also trying to do, I think, with my master's, and I'm really hoping to like achieve that, is try to bring about some more action into it. I do connect with students globally on like a person, like people doing their capstones, or students who want to like just get into like the whole academic part of it and be like, teach us. And I think I still do that like on person to person basis, but look at the world. It's huge. So I think the difference. I mean, I know it starts with like smaller things, but like I said, I want to make sure that I am enabling and the action that's going on is also on a bigger scale. So I think I'm trying to learn that from my position here as well, where I'm not just a clinical practitioner, but a student again. So.
Oh gosh, it's going to be such an exciting journey. And you know, I love this idea of bringing about more action, right? We're having the conversation now, but we don't stop there, right? We push those conversations and we turn them into action. So I love that you're there to gain more knowledge on how to, you know, roll this out even further. No pressure. But so that answers a couple of my questions, right? In terms of what motivated you to contribute to this podcast, is there anything else that you'd like to add in addition to what you've said?
I think there's like a special gratitude. Like I'll just put like a star sign for especially my family and friends. Because what happens is when we talk about the kind of support, because often when we talk about the whole journey, I know this may not seem as relevant, but I want to tell people that this is very much relevant. If my family, which was extremely conservative, given the kind of education and the background that they have been raised from, it's justified that they were conservative and not understanding the fact that, oh, I just want to get a master's of sexology. Or, you know what, I'll be talking about sex with other people explicitly and telling them how to do it. I mean, imagine having those kind of conversations with parents, something that everybody's terrified of. But I was able to do that. And I think it is, I also want to have, I've just so much gratitude. And there's so much respect for my parents, my family, and my friends as well, because all of them understood. And it, or at least they tried to get on the same page. So, I mean, it has brought such a great transformation that even today, if there are like vibrators somewhere around in the house and my mom will be like, did you use it? I'm like, yes. So, I mean, it's for a person to tell that, oh, you shouldn't be talking about periods with other people, to be like, oh, is your vibrator? It's a long journey, and people don't appreciate that. And while I am struggling, and as I struggle to move forward personally and professionally, there are a lot of other people struggling with me who probably are not OTs, but they are still struggling with me to make sure I move forward. But they're also trying to move forward with me, having a different thought process, coming from different values and beliefs, and just a completely different attitude. Everybody's trying to change at their own pace. So this is just like a special shout out to my family and friends who just make everything possible, hype the hell out of me. Of also, sorry for those people who are offended with the word hell. I mean, that happens. So,
Well, big kudos to your support system, right?
yes.
These are not easy things to talk about, particularly in your culture, right? It's again, it's just not common. It's
It's
just not.
not. It's
So
not.
we're going to make it common after this. And I love that motivation. I love, you know, I love that shout out. And you know, you also kind of alluded already to some of the things that inspired you to do th this type of work. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
Thanks to all the haters. That's all.
They actually pushed you, right? They're the ones
Yeah,
who.
but I'm like trying to be a bigger person, and now that I understand so many interactions happen, so I understand it's yeah, they don't know what they were talking about exactly, so that's okay. But at the end of the day, I think they're still like a corner and be like, thank you, hater.
Yeah.
So
They, I mean, that challenge is important for us to see, right? Just to kind
yeah.
of yeah, and I think, you know, that challenge speaks to discomfort, right? And
Yes, I think it also helps you gain that amount of I think it even that has taken me a little while. I mean, I don't imagine 20-year-old me compared to like 25-year-old me understand the fact that we are filled with emotions, we are filled with rage, we see a singular perspective as to this is right, this is wrong. But as you like get more experiences, you hear more people, you realize that, oh no, everybody has an opinion because of certain layers of things that have happened. So we are not saying
yes.
it's right or wrong. We're just saying it exists. So what can we do next?
Yeah. Right?
So
It's that, it's a shift in the
mature.
lens. Yeah. A shift in the lens and, you know, really being less textbook, right? Really being more of a human, it's more of a humanistic approach.
Yes.
I'm seeing that a lot in my work lately. So why don't we segue into your work? Can you describe to us a little bit more about your work, whom you serve, where you're currently with the setting in which you're
Yeah.
currently doing the work in, right?
So currently my job is to read a lot, apply a lot, and yeah, that's my work currently as a student. But before this, everything was, oh, I loved being my own boss. But the work was extremely diversified in the way that number one was definitely the clinical practice, where I was looking at different populations, like you just mentioned, from ages 4 years to 95 years. I say 95, but my oldest client has been about 90, 94 or 93. So that was the age group that I was serving. And within that, I also made sure that I was providing services to partners. And the third population is stakeholders or caregivers, parents who are working with children, who are working with people who with intellectual disabilities, people who cannot consent, and so on and so forth. So this was the whole structure or the tier of giving providing services, which was solo, partnered, and with parents. Group interventions, because everything happened via telehealth and some of the home healthcare settings, it was difficult to conduct or bring about like group therapy settings, but it was always great to refer them to something else as to organizations or associations who are doing a much better job at collecting a population which is, say, probably living with a certain diagnosis or living with a certain condition. So I used to like refer them there for like if they need to have those kind of support groups or group therapy. So this was basically how the clinical work used to go on for me. The second part was academic, where I was helping in one-on-one tutoring, peer mentoring, helping students refine or like act as a consultant for their capstone projects and so on. That was the academic part. I also was helping, or at least trying to go to like act as a sessional, oh, sorry, a guest lecturer for certain universities where we talk about everything OT and sexuality in a really beautiful and awesome way. And the last part was a little bit more flexible, where I was working with brands and magazines if they wanted an expert opinion and putting that occupational therapy name next to it so that they know that yes, occupational therapists can also talk about sexual rehabilitation, sexual wellness, and so on, and how can they help. And also working with brands in a way that I used to review and analyze some of the assistive aids, like sex toys, sexual aids, lubricant, what's good, what's bad, what should you put into your vagina, what you're not going to your vagina, what are you doing with it? How can it be used for stimulation, pleasure? Is it good? Is it bad? What do you need to do? Like a complete activity analysis. So that is what the work was. It was separated into three very neat sections.
How fun! I mean, how diverse and how, yeah, I love the variety, right? Same topic, but you're able to communicate, share on a variety of levels. I love
that. Yes. Yes. Even though I know a lot of people, I mean, this is the thing that people say in business, like pick your niche and then stick to it if you want to keep it the most impactful and effective. Mm-hmm. But I think I'm a poor businesswoman. I shouldn't be saying that, but I don't know. The whole idea was to help. The whole idea was to, like I said, put the things in action. And the action does not happen on just one layer or like one level. You have to work in the community, but also make sure you're hitting all the other levels. I am asking my patients to be like, go to an occupational therapist, but where is the occupational therapist actually trained? How can they go to one? So, I mean, that brings to the other level, because the more I talk to them about, oh, this is what you can do. This is what we are doing. There's a bunch of things we need to be doing. This is like taking the baton forward and further. And then also talking to other journalists who are talking about sexuality. They're like, oh, so what's happening? Who else can help it? Because you do see sexologists in this space. You do see psychiatrists and psychologists in this space. You also see pelvic floor therapists and physiotherapists. Mm-hmm. But what are occupational therapists doing?
Yeah. I think just recently our OTs exploring the pelvic health space. So now, you know, in an even broader category, I think it's important. So, oh, okay. So, oh gosh. So, okay, let me regroup. So tutoring, capstones, guest lecturing, writing, doing sort of op-ed sort of things here, you know, sharing your knowledge about sexual rehab and wellness. So, and then even working with, you know, with brands. So are you, and now I know you're busy with, or getting busier with, you know, with your current journey, but are you still able to do any of this stuff part-time?
With brands, yes, I still continue to, but with clients, I have a strict policy about the fact that they are going to come for a follow-up. Mm-hmm. And I do not, and since I'm in a different time zone, I do not want that kind of a commitment where I'm like, oh, sorry, I need to cancel. And I have like a very abrupt schedule. So that's a very strict policy about me. If I am committing to client care, I'll be there 100% mm-hmm. unless something changes, but otherwise no, because you can't half-ass it. Yeah. There is no other option. They need you. They're going to be vulnerable and you can't leave them in between.
Yeah. So, well, I respect that so much. You want to be there 1,000% for your client, right? And you're currently distracted.
I think there's so much vulnerability. There is so much. It's such an high stress inducing session. And we do not go beyond 45 or 60 minutes. And you cannot cover something that's so sensitive. They cannot know me in 60 minutes. They do not know if I would say something discouraging to them. They have been to other professionals who have, and most of the time, this is how most clients come to me. Mm-hmm. They have seen somebody, but they were disregarded, or they were mocked at, or they were shamed for their choices of preferences. And they were like, there's no other help available. So this is why they are here, to understand how I can help or if I can. So I think that requires, I don't know. Initially, I mean, I was like, okay, we can keep it flexible. I have to be professional. But I mean, I'm still professional, but that does not mean I have to be an ass. So.
Yeah. Well, thanks for that reminder. No, I don't think that's, can we censor that? I don't know. We're keeping it on. I don't think the FCC is going to come after us for that. But thanks so much for that reminder. You know, you're working with, I mean, it's sensitive. It's these are difficult conversations to have with individuals. So thanks so much for that reminder. And I want to hear more about, I guess what a typical session might be like, of course, without, disclosing too many details, but what a typical session might be like. But I want to take a couple of steps back and kind of make the connection between, you going to university, being an occupational therapist, and then having these conversations with your parents about, sexuality, and then, or maybe that vision came to fruition first, and then the conversations with the parents happened, and then now you have this platform. So can you fill in a little bit of the blanks?
With family, I think it's been easier because I'm the youngest child, so I was just blindly loved. So that's not the way to put it. I was
You're the baby.
Yeah, just love blindly. I think, yeah. So I think with them, I think just having or telling them that, sex is different from what you envision. There is a lot happening. Having those conversations about gender. Now, there's also, this is very important because even though I have a highly educated family background, all right? So my father was a scientist. My mother is an accountant. My brother is an engineer. Everybody is well-educated, well-rounded, well-read. But what you also have to understand is that English is not a language. This is not how we think. This is not how we talk. Even though we do, but it's not our mother tongue, right? So
yeah.
We do not talk about sex and gender, right? So we have very different ways of having these conversations to make them understand what sex is, what gender is, what are we talking about when it comes to intersex, what is non-binary, why am I doing the kind of work that I'm doing, how does it fall into occupational therapy? And I think just explaining them that sex has a lot many more components. For example, body autonomy, sensuality, intimacy, solo or partner, but also understanding the body functioning, what feels good, what is desire, what is arousal. And I know we didn't have these detailed conversations, but the fact that even though my parents wanted to understand how I'll be working, because there's this notion that if you're talking about sex, you might be having sex with your patients. And I'm like, no, that's not me. This is not, I'm not the right professional to do that. This is no one. But this is how my boundaries are defined. This is where my work ends. Or how can I help individuals? Talking about disabilities or people with disabilities who need to navigate this area, or people with some sexual concerns or issues, people who are trying to conceive, but also find the process to be a lot more tedious. People who are undergoing IVF and they are not able to find that kind of intimacy after having sex or before having sex or during the whole procedure. So on and so forth. I think there's so many layers to it. I think, and it was just letting them know that this is how my role would be. This is where my role ends. This is where I start working. This is what the professional limits are going to be. I think that was a little comforting for them. you can't change somebody's value system altogether, but yeah, there are certain conversations they do not want to talk about, or they do not want to accept, rather. I wouldn't say they don't want to talk about. They wouldn't rather accept me doing it. Yeah, okay, yes. Rather doing it, but not me talking or me doing it.
Well, you're the baby.
Exactly. Right? But they have also wrapped their heads around the fact that dating is different. Relationships are different. It's not a very common concept. I mean, I know Western culture talks about dating and relationships differently. That's not how we did it.
Yes.
We are the place of arranged marriages, and where marriages happen for some very different reasons. So the whole concept of dating and relationships is fairly new. It's a very millennial thing. With technology, there was more this is how a colonized country would look like. A colonized country would look like. You are trying to pick up habits from everywhere else because that makes the most sense to you, because it gives you a sense of freedom. So whatever that constructive freedom is, but it still gives you a sense of freedom. And I think the same has translated into my professional space as well, where I used to be like, why can't we talk about it? And I think a great breakthrough, especially before I left my bachelor's course, was doing a dissertation with a bunch of other batchmates and classmates. So it was like four of us talking about why occupational therapists, what are the barriers in addressing sexuality or sexual health per se. We didn't use the word sexuality then, babies, you know, but we spoke about what are the perceived barriers, what are the actual barriers. It was so great to put that for the very first time in a Mumbai university, because nobody had done that before.
Yeah.
And nobody had done that in India before as well, as far as I can see. And it was just like an institutional level research, but the kind of impact it had, and I'm so amazed by it, because later on, one of my friends and batchmates also went on for her master's, focused on sexuality rehabilitation in patients with neurological conditions. My professor also started doing and like learning more about it in terms of, say, sexual rehabilitation and the sexual quality of life. And I'm happy for that.
Yes.
And I'm so, and I would like slightly believe I was the motivation, but even if I wasn't, I really don't care. People were talking about it. People are doing this research now. People are publishing it. And it's important in an Indian context to be done, because then we are saying the conversations are moving forward. We can find the gaps, the limitations, the drawbacks later on. But the fact that somebody is trying and trying to address this in a population, and in this whole process of the research, I think they might have found more ways to look at sexuality, sexual health, sexual education from their own biases, from their own comfort level and their own skill level. And that's so amazing.
Yeah. It looks like action to me.
Yes, but it is a lot of action on like smaller levels, and I do credit myself and others for it, but yeah, I'm just too aspirational. So
well, I credit you too. You know, that's why I love this platform. Someone has to start the conversation. Someone has to start the dialogue. And thanks again for another reminder, right? In your culture, there, you didn't have the vocabulary to talk about these things. You didn't have the words. So first you have to talk amongst yourselves, right? And figure out, okay, what's common language here? Like, what are we really talking about? And I think once that collaboration took place, everyone was able to kind of go their own ways and, you know, run with it, right? And whatever way they felt right about. You're going to, you know, you're furthering your education. People are, you know, taking action by doing research, by having more dialogue about this topic. So I absolutely credit you.
I'm going to take it. It makes me feel bad. So I think it's
so.
And I think that is also how I think it goes into my sessions as well. I mean, it's pretty much the same, you know, the way that I show up. I am there to listen. I'm not flinching every time they say something that I do not agree with, or is it something that they shouldn't, or something that they have done wrong, or it's a mistake. I'm there smiling, happy to listen to whatever they have to say. I'm not smiling all the time. I mean, I get the context. It's like I am not creating those barriers, even though when I'm not speaking or when I'm not actively treating them, I am making sure that I'm still an accessible resource who they can come and talk to, who they think that, oh my, okay, she's listening. She's there. She heard me. I was seen. And this is something that does not happen, because women, people with vulvas, trans people are some of the most common populations where they share experiences of going to the doctor and complaining of pain and being disregarded with that. It's just that you have like a lower tolerance.
Yeah.
Or it may be because of something else. Or it's just because you're fat and you need to lose weight. Very common themes, extremely common themes. But how is that helping the person?
No, it's shaming the person.
Who's going back in in a very dynamic context, who are living in a very dynamic environment where work, personal life, their internal environment, everything else is just interacting at continuously. So
Yes.
how are we just saying that, oh, lose weight, or you have like lower tolerance and things like that? So I think
Yeah.
that this is also something that it's a very essential part of the sessions as well, where I want to know them, I want to understand where they are coming from. It's not just about understanding if they have any medical conditions, or not just about the whole medical aspect, but like a whole, when we talk about the whole biopsychosocial model, I think
Yeah.
that was it's much more better to understand that, oh, there's a body, and this body is being put through a psychological and social context each and every single time, which is very unique to a person. And I
Yeah.
think that has been like a primary focus, where we are looking at the person, where I am looking at the person, and I see this person is going through various settings. And then I think just through the conversation, validating them, giving that, and just giving that space where they allow themselves to be like, okay, this isn't
Yes.
bad, this isn't abnormal, this is not uncommon. I think there is like
I'm not
such,
alone. Yeah.
yeah, I'm not alone, I'm not the only one feeling this.
Yes.
And it's even though sessions can look differently, I think this is the hardest breakthrough for any client to have, that, oh, okay, I'm okay to feel this, or this
Yeah.
is okay, or like, yes, this is something that I've learned from my culture, from my religion, this is ingrained in me, I need to change that sexual script. These are just, and this is such a common theme, and I can't even emphasize how common this is, but I think this is one of the first steps, and I think this is somewhere, it's a common theme that you see across everything I feel now that I'm talking, that having that little tiny amount of breakthrough that, oh, I'm challenging my own values and my sexual script, and then be like, they can be different things. And just like
Yes.
opening that window of perspective, and then just accepting the fact that there can be different things. We can learn about this. We should understand about this. So I think that window of perspective,
Yeah.
I think it's yeah. I had a breakthrough while talking about it. So
I think I did too. I was kind of like, oh my gosh, yes. So no one can see us, but our facial expressions definitely said that. And oh my gosh, there's so much to unpack in what you just said. And I heard a lot of things like therapeutic use of self, right? I heard so many OT skills, there. The importance of really listening to that person's needs and not what you think that person might need, right? And also, giving that person really a safe place to be able to even talk about the super sensitive stuff. And then the breakthrough, right? Like that light bulb and being just being a part of that process, I think is so important. And it's almost like an art. Yeah, it's almost an art. You need to be able to, yeah, really kind of be in tune with that person, understand your value and within that relationship, right? And it's not just what you know, it's really always checking in, feeling out that other person. So thanks so much for sharing that. And I guess I want to know more. Can you give us a little bit more of a peek as to what a typical session might look like? I know groups were few and far between, perhaps during the pandemic, and these are also, I mean, although I think these would be such great topics, group topics, a typical individual session, like kind of what problems did you work on, and what kinds of goals did you have? Like, did you have like a typical assessment, initial assessment that you did, and
Yeah,
or
okay.
standardized assessments that you used?
So yes. With I think there's always an initial assessment. You can't go away from it because you need to have everything on paper. the kind of medications they are on, the age, just everything else, the demographics, but also it keeps you safeguarded, because in a way that if at all the client decides to sue you, you have the hand. Because like I said, I was working independently. So as a freelancer, this becomes all the more important, because you have to, no matter what, it does not matter if you're a freelancer or not, you still have to work within the ethics and codes that have been laid down. So you cannot cross that, but you never know how the patients perceive it, right? So this was something very important, that's why I think. So that kind of documentation, especially the initial assessment, knowing in and out about the fact that, oh, this is what the patient has told me, this is what the client has told me, this is what they have built on their own. This is what something that was done. And I think there is also sessional notes as well. Like if, once the session is done, the notes have been maintained so that if at all anything happens, if they are making a disclosure or anything of that sort, I have it on paper in some way or the other.
It's record the keeping. Session,
because you can't record sessions because they are sensitive. Mm-hmm. So, and I think this is something that was very important. Standardized assessments, not in every single case, but in some cases, yes. Especially when we are talking about quality of life, like sexual quality of life, then when we are talking about sensory assessments for people who have neuralgic pain, who have sciatica because of which, or have like tailbone fracture, back pains because of like nerve innervations or nerve impingement, because of them, because of these conditions, they, or even irritable bowel syndrome, very common. Constipation, very common. Because of that, they've had some sort of I don't want to call it dysfunction, but it does cause some amount of imbalance in the pelvic musculature in some way or the other. And I do not want to call it a dysfunction because it's a different category, but some amount of pelvic inflammation and some musculature imbalances, because of which it does affect their sexuality. Mm-hmm. So I think in such cases, having that kind of an assessment did help. It's not like I said, it's very case dependent. So it's not applied all the time, but in some cases it is. My preferred, I think another assessment would be in cases where I did not use explicit as a framework, as an assessment. Mm-hmm. Are you familiar with the explicit model?
No. Tell us about that.
It's something that's written already in Pedrity. I think it still says explicit. I am not sure. But explicit model is like the revised version of it, where there is extended permission, limited information, specific suggestions, and intensive therapy. So it's like a whole pyramid, like a whole circle of it, where permission is explicitly stated in all the stages and all phases of therapy. So it does not mean that the client has showed up today and I will not ask them about something. I always have to take an informed consent that, are you okay talking about this? And if not, you can stop. And this has to happen at every stage of every assessment, treatment, and even some of the suggestion phases where, for example, if I have to talk about, have you used sexual aids before? Would you be comfortable, or do you want to unpack this in another session?
Okay, I love that.
It's a way of, and I think this is why I say explicit, because use explicit and not implicit, because implicit, we were just assuming that the client is coming to us, so they're okay talking about everything.
Yeah, or they're supposed to answer our questions. Yeah.
Yes. But, and I think that's a very good reason why this should be used, because A, it can give you the liberty to have open-ended questions, which does really help a lot. Because at this point in time, there's nothing that's very, which I'll come back to it, but before I was working, there was nothing OT specific to it, right?
Yeah.
So there was no OT framework applied to it, but now we do, which is the second framework that I want to come to, and the assessment, which is OPISI. Which uses the person PEOP model. Mm-hmm. This is something that I have been using in conjunction with the explicit before OPISI existed, which is Occupational performance inventory for sexuality and intimacy. So this is, it's not been long. I think it's 2020 or 21. It's not been, it's just been like around 1 or 2 years. But it's sorry, I've lost
track. Okay. We'll find it and we will post it on our show notes for everyone to see.
I think that's the second assessment, which did allow people to fill in questions, which is very much closer to what I used to do with explicit. But what there's like pros and cons to it, right? With explicit, you need to have understanding of what you are talking about in terms of sexuality, mm-hmm. and then fill open-ended questions on from your end. That is the skill of the practitioner, right?
Got it.
I think OPISI solves that up to a great extent. So if you do not know what are the questions to ask, I think OPISI does a very great job giving you like enlisting standard. All those questions mm-hmm. about, yes, body functioning, talking about desire, talking about sensuality, intimacy, family planning, and things like that. The
people yes. have to hear.
It just lays down the question and the patients or the clients just have to answer it, right?
Got it.
But for me, the barrier working in Indian populations is that although I can translate it to patients, it still is, I mean, there's still some bias, or I wouldn't say bias, but it isn't translated directly, or I'm basically explaining them as to what I understand of the question.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And their understanding of the question could be slightly different.
Yes.
Right. So I think there's that disconnect there, but especially for patients who were educated and who could do it, I did use that as much mm-hmm. as I could. But for those who couldn't, in those cases, I think explicit was great. Or for people who've had much more nuanced layers, say talking about pain management or dysesthesia with pelvic inflammation or pelvic dysfunctions. I think this was explicit, working through explicit was better because it's not just talking about quality of life, but you're also talking about pain management. You're also talking about environment adaptations. And so and sensory processing as well.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot is happening. It's a lot more intensive. So I think these are the two. And like I said, PEOP, which is like a framework, but these are yes. some of the common assessments that I've assessments and intervention models that I've seen myself use in most of the sessions as an OT. If at all, if something is beyond my scope, if something needs to be having an interdisciplinary approach, and I please request all practitioners to do this, is when if you feel something goes beyond your scope, and I have done that too, like I said, and I said this early on, if I do not do something, if I like talking about support groups, talking about group therapies, talking about, say, intensive psychological care, we are talking about counseling, we are talking about cognitive behavior therapy. These are the things that I'm not skilled at. I can counsel. I understand yes. coming from I can give that humanistic approach. That's all I can do.
Yeah.
My job ends at counseling. And if you have additional degrees and if you're incorporating, great. But I think for me, it was helpful that if I knew that the patient needs more, the person needs more, then I'm referring them to a network of professionals who I know are queer affirming, who are trauma informed. At least they know what they're working with.
Mm-hmm.
They have clients and people before. So I know it's not going to cause further harm. And this is an option that's open to the clients, where I tell them this is a list of professionals. You can have an initial chat, see how that goes and who you want to work with.
Yeah.
Right. So I think giving them this liberty and allowing them, instead of just being like, now you have to go to this professional to take it. I have avoided doing that because they're already going through so much.
Yes.
Having that kind of autonomy to choose that, yes, I can go to this person. I've selected this professional.
Yes.
It gives a lot more sense of control, and I don't know what to take from them.
Yeah, I love that empowered approach. You know,
and please refer. I don't know why. What's the problem? Refer.
Yeah.
Refer when you can't do something. Please refer. Please.
Yeah. We can't do it all, right? And I think it's so important to recognize when there is that need, when it's gone beyond our scope, or not even just our scope, but just your own professional knowledge as a therapist, right? Your professional skill set. We're all OTs, but we're stronger in certain areas than others, right? Or we're more knowledgeable in certain areas than others. So, really being, I guess, ethical about that and understanding, your capacities and what you can offer, because it's one of our codes is to not do any harm, right? And it's particularly in this line of work where there's a sensitive nature, and for folks to even broach these topics is already difficult. You want to make sure that you're receiving from on the receiving end, being the therapist, that you're not creating damage, and to remember that it's very easy to create damage because these are sensitive waters, right? So to really just kind of have that framework from the get-go. And it's not for everybody. It really isn't. Although I feel that it's important for us to have that lens, no matter what setting we work in. Obviously, your setting more so than
I think
others.
this is what I have covered like way before through like my Instagram posts, through blogs on my website, and I say this again and again. We have had our own challenges. For example, even though there is an occupational therapist or a practitioner who may have suffered abuse on their own, I mean, that's just so much of a extra added layer, or who have experienced a similar kind of trauma or any kind of trauma before. So talking about these sensitive topics with clients is going to bring back a lot of memories. It's going to be equally triggering. And we can't just be like, you have to be professional about it. That's not how it works. I mean, we can try, but what I do encourage therapists to do, or even practitioners and even students while you're at that level of learning, is that understand where you lie, what are the safe topics that you can discuss with your clients, and where is it that you want to draw a line. And I mean, if it's for some very personal psychological reason, I get it. But just don't let discomfort that, oh, I don't want to, or probably somebody else can. I mean, don't let that attitude stop you if that's what's actually stopping you. I mean, there are some other people who genuinely have reasons for not addressing it, and I understand it's very difficult. And even in those situations, I think every single initial assessment should talk about sexuality, be it in terms of pronouns, be it in terms of gender. I think these are some of the ways that even they know that, oh, this is like an inclusive form. We know they know what they're talking about. Or even talking about sexuality very briefly. If they have any partners, what's the kind of relationship style they have the experience because of the diagnosis or the medication, or have they had any concerns with experiencing sexuality with self, with others? Has there been any fluctuations in desire, arousal? It's very mechanical, but it's also very basic. And if they do say yes to any of those questions, if in your initial assessment, you know, and you can always say that, you know what, I'm not an expert, but I can connect you with someone who can address these concerns better for you.
That's great
And that's all
advice.
you have to do. And that's all you have to do. I mean, I get it. If you do not want to get into the area, I completely get it, but it's not optional. It's be there in every single assessment with every single person,
Just
especially the consenting adults. It has to be there. It has to be
Just as
there.
standard as we, look at how one's gait might be, or how standard it might be to ask someone about their coping skills or ability to manage their finances, right? It's just,
How independent are you in doing your basic ADLs? What can you do? What can't you do? This is basic. This is. We're talking about emotional connection. We're talking about intimacy. We're talking about literally everything. So I think
Who doesn't
that.
have those, right? Or want them or seek them out or.
If you don't, and I think that can also tell you a lot about it. If there are persons who are asexual, I think even them making that disclosure early on can also help you understand how they experience their sexuality.
Yes.
How, what occupations are they not working with, or what does work with them, or if some other aspects are affecting or influencing their sexuality. I think this is why I say it's so important to have like these little bit of these demographics there on the form. And I think this is also a part of my initial assessment, is because of this reason, because number one, I may forget, because there are gonna be so many clients.
Yes.
You gotta stay on top of it. But second, and the most important thing is, you have to make sure that when you are addressing them or addressing any of their concerns, some people are, especially with pronouns, some people with your diagnosis, I think some people are, they want you to say living with and not suffering with.
Ah, yeah.
Or were diagnosed with, or people with disabilities, or a disabled person.
Yeah.
So I think
more strength based.
Yes. So I think everybody has their own way of going about with these ways of communication. And I think this establishing this also helps in a session. And I think the first session becomes really important in so many ways, because we are understanding language, we are understanding how to address them and how they relate with their body, with the diagnosis, with the labels, with the language, but also sort of understanding if I can help this person and how can I help them, which is also established in the very first session. Because initially, and I stopped doing that, because initially I used to provide like a 15-minute, like a free session before any client wanted to sign up, was because I wanted to understand if they would be a good fit. And we'll be a good fit if they think they're going to be comfortable with me. And I have to know if I'm going to be the right person to address everything that they have to bring to the table. And if not, then I can just refer them early on and save them some money. But the thing with having an open channel is that a lot of people just keep booking. And then the people who need those sessions really can't, aren't joining for those 15 minutes. So that's why I stopped, unfortunately. But I did that for like quite some time. And I think this was, it was a very good, helpful system where people were getting the need that they wanted. They were receiving help. They knew that they could sign up with my service, or they could like sign up with someone else's service. So like I said, there's just so much control, and they know that they have the choice. They have... they have the control to make that choice and the freedom to make that choice, I think was a lot more empowering to them.
Mm-hmm.
So, but
important.
Yes, I think this is what, this is why the first session becomes, I mean, not that the other sessions aren't, but I think the first session becomes so important, because I have to be that dependable, trustable person who they think can help, and also brings out a lot more honesty from them. They aren't hiding things anymore, or they aren't saying what I am supposed to hear. Instead, they are like, oh, I did this and I want to do this, or things like that. Or even with, for example, people who wanted to explore fantasies, which I don't, it's not, it's a little bit on the extreme spectrum of fantasies, where even I'd be like, okay, I don't want to, I'm not sure how I can, but removing that judgment-free aspect of it and being like, you have to listen, you have to see what behavior is, where is it coming from, and how can you help them in a safe way?
Yes.
I think that it's not about eliminating, as long as it does not cause any harm to another person or themselves, it's good. How can it be practiced in a safe way? And I think this also happens with people who want to use substance or include substance in activities, or who are sort of recovering from it, but also feel like, oh, how can this be made safe? Or if this is causing me anxiety, how am I bringing this together? I think so these things, exploring a little bit of this and that. So like I said, there's so much variety.
There's when a you, lot. Like,
it's a lot, because when you open it up and when you just say sexuality, it's going to overlap with every single aspect of your life.
Yeah.
So I think these are some common themes which emerge in every single session, be it about the kind of assessment or framework that I want to use, how am I going to present myself, how am I going to the client, And when it comes to goal setting, now sometimes, like I said in like the previous one, is like there's no problem. They just want to understand if the fantasy is okay, how can it be practiced safely?
Got
Which
it.
is they have their goal set. All I have to do is understand that, oh, this is what's supposed to be done and we can move forward. Or it can be again very, very, very simple in a way that I was working with a person who does drag and they wanted to learn how to put on makeup after a flexor tendon injury. So after the whole rehabilitation, they are still trying to focus on how to get the activity done. And then I remembered searching as to how can you do eyeliner? What's the best like the kind of makeup tools that are available? And like literally went on like a whole Google search and I'm like, okay, so even though it can sometimes be more abstract, but sometimes it can be just very specific. People, like I said, when who have nerve impingements, who have back pain, who have pelvic inflammations, muscular imbalance, or even with people who have just given like after childbirth, how are they turning to resuming sexual activities? So I think in that cases, it's not just even though they say sexual activity, but it's also other layers of feeling, you know, getting connected with yourself, connecting with body image. It's about flexibility. It's about urinary continence and addressing those concerns as well. So even though they just talk about sexual activity, I think with the conversation, eliciting the things that, oh, these things might also be happening. Right?
Or be
So
affected, yeah.
yeah. And then if this is what it is, what we can do is we can rearrange it. And then we can see that these things on the priority basis can affect and influence your sexuality as well. So if the pelvic muscles have strengthened better, the contraction and flexibility is better, the tonality is better, the ability to say experience any kind of touch stimulation would also be easier. It would be less painful. If penetration is your focus, then I think again, penetration, orgasming, anything of those things. They will become easier if the musculature is also going, if the blood flow is better, and things like that. So I think helping them understand that even though this is your final goal, there are also like mini goals which we may have to achieve together. Or if we can like reprioritize, which you also again have to ask because it's my body, they want things to get done. I don't know what it feels like, they are living it. So like sort of taking the permission of like reprioritizing is to oh, but also explaining them at the same time, you know what? This affects this. So do you think we can work on this before than that? And then probably see if it is also improving the way that you feel desire, or you know, can we add a little bit of sex, self-pleasure activities or body image exercises or body mapping exercises, something with touch, something with pressure, and things like that. And I think that also brings about a lot of change in the fact that, ooh, sexual sex, like having sex is not just about penetration, or it's not just about something going inside something, or it can look different ways. There can be sensations that they can explore with. I think that becomes a whole, a lot more adventurous for them because they're like, this does not feel like therapy anymore. It feels a lot more adventurous and experimental, which didn't happen before.
And they're learning about their
Yeah.
anatomies and how all of that kind of comes together. Oh my gosh, I'm just hearing OT, OT, OT everywhere, from therapeutic use of self, from being client-centered, right? From goal setting and reprioritizing and making adjustments and then adaptations, right? So
Yes.
we are so well suited for this kind of work.
We are, and that's what I keep saying. We are, but like I said, it's just you have to remember where to draw a line because when it, for example, when it's intensive pelvic floor therapy, I probably will not be the right person because I do talk about pelvic floor, but when I know that there are like a lot more layers to it, I can do it. I don't mind, but if I know there is another specialist who has been working with a particular structure for longer than I have, they know what they're dealing with. And especially in cases with nerve involvement, it's actually better that somebody else, a specialist, is also there assisting you. So I think that does become important. But nothing, I think this is the biggest takeaway that I take from any session, is that if I can't do it, I just accept it.
Yeah.
Instead of wasting my clients' money, their expectations, and then just letting them know that, you know what, it's okay, I can refer you to somebody, and I know they can help you in some ways or the other.
Yes.
So I think this is also, there have been just one sessions, there can be a series of sessions, but it can just, there's just so much variety, and there's nothing guarantees anything. But I think I just bring those hard yeses and hard nos, where I'm like, yes, this is what I can take, and this is what I can endure. Knows I can't. This is not something that I know about, and I don't think I can speak for their experiences or anything.
Yes.
So, or I have the professional or the therapeutic skills for it. So I think in those cases, whatever falls in hard no always gets a referral.
Yeah.
So, and the maybe areas is something that we all learn together. So.
Well, that's such a great advice for other OT practitioners out there, right? Really understanding your boundaries, understanding, again, your capacities. Do you have any other advice that you'd like to share with anybody who might be interested in following your path or going into the specialty?
Okay. What can I say? I think there are a lot of... I mean, network seems like a long shot, but try to do that. I think we didn't have as much of a social media, to be very honest. When I started out, the social media wasn't, people were talking about occupational therapy, but it wasn't heavy education based, or probably it was, but people are doing that now. It's, it's very education based now.
Yes.
They're like talking about it. People are talking about their cases. They bring about some sort of information through it. So I think social media is a great place to start, but please make sure you are following people who have some amount of, they have degrees and licenses in the particular area of research. Because at this point in time, you can talk, you can see people talk about sex education a lot. You will find sex educators literally everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. But it's, or people who claim to be sex experts, but you do not know what the background is. And I'm really happy that people are, like, more people are taking charge about sexual education. But when it comes to per se therapy and rehabilitation, you need a lot more than just a label.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no way that can be regulated in the world right now. The sex therapy or sex expert label is very loose. Or sexologist label is very loose at the moment. Anybody can take like a short course and be like, I'm a sexologist. It's that simple. So there's no way to regulate that at this point in time. So just before like blindly following somebody, just because you'll be like, oh yes, this matches my thought. Yes, this is right. This is what I wanted to hear. Be a little skeptical of every single content that you consume, including mine.
Yeah.
Be skeptical of it, because what happens from that skepticism is that new ideas are born. You can challenge, you can use those assumptions, you can use those values to tell me this is where you went wrong and this is not right. And that's fair. That's completely fair, because I'm learning, you are learning, everybody's learning. So nobody is 100% right. And that's something that we've been talking a lot about in my course as well. It's about be skeptical as much as you can. Don't, just because it's peer reviewed, just because it's a research, does not mean you have to like blindfoldedly accept it and it's like the word of truth.
Yes. I mean, we learned through this conversation just 30 minutes ago. I think we were like, oh my gosh, that something clicked, right? And I think the openness to that is even more important, particularly when we're working with our clients, right? As empathetic as we can be, we don't know what it's like to be in their shoes, and it's lived experience and lived perspective, right? And for us to have the best understanding of that will really just make us better clinicians and better helpers to these individuals. So, thanks for that advice. Can you share with us any common myths or misconceptions about being, you know, an OT working in sexuality or in your role that you'd like to maybe demystify?
I think probably with the whole idea that, oh, you focus on pelvic floor, oh, you focus with like perinatal care. And honestly, I have nothing against it. I'm really happy people are doing it. But I also understand that you cannot localize it to a particular part of the body.
Mm-hmm.
It's my opinion. It's my opinion coming from after looking at a range of probably say concerns and diagnosis and seeing that people have nowhere to go, but there are a million ways an occupational therapist could be helping them right now.
Yes.
So I think I think that's why the whole idea of that, yes, people should be getting into like specialized care because in some cases and in many situations it's required, but it's a very complicated opinion. It's something that I have some bias towards because I am somebody who's expecting inclusive care, and that can also be from the fact that I didn't receive inclusive care when I was mm-hmm. pushed, or when I am a patient even today.
Yes.
So I think that just those are the emotions that come from it, and then that's why I explicitly state that it's a bias that I have. But I'm not being ungrateful to the fact that they exist, because sometimes yeah. I really need them. I need that kind of specialist to improve my patient's life, to improve the community life, to promote a more healthier community, and they are yes. making it happen. But I think that's I think also one of the myths that you can, but and people who are working with perinatal and pelvic health, they are talking about sexuality, but you have to understand sexuality cannot just be addressed in those areas.
Yes.
So if you think you want your practice to have a lot more diversity, like I said, it may not be a great business model because you're doing a lot of things, but it may not sound like a great business model, but I think it's something that we need to look towards when it comes to sexuality. It has to be that expansive.
Yeah.
And I think it's applicable everywhere for all age groups, for all yes. settings, for all areas. So I think that's one of the biggest things where people think, oh, you just work with adults. I'm like, no, I was in a school-based setup before. And that's where this idea stemmed from. And those kids have taught me a lot more. And they have taught me that, oh yes, sexuality doesn't happen overnight. Mm-hmm. It's a developing process right from the day that you're born.
Yes.
So even with infants, even with kids, it's everywhere. It's all yes. the time. And that's why we call it sexual development.
Yes.
Developing.
Oh, you've opened my eyes so much. And I thought I knew a little something over here. But yes, and I understand why it needs to be broad. I understand why it needs to be not specific, right? Because being specific means you're being non-inclusive potentially, or it has the risks of being non-inclusive, which is probably the last thing that you want to do in this specialty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least for now, like I said, because when there is a dearth of information, and even, I mean, we talk about evidence practiced a lot, but where is the evidence?
Yeah.
So then that it also becomes like a moral and an ethical dilemma as to, oh, this is not happening, so how do you practice it?
Yes.
Which again is like a myth and a misconception. I mean, I feel that, oh, whatever I do is probably not evidence-based, but not really. What I do is something that's already been done and applied to other aspects of life or other areas. So what I'm just doing is that picking that evidence and applying here, even mm-hmm. though it's not spoken about in that particular occupation, the ideology, the treatment, the way of action and like approach towards it is just the same. I'm just yeah. applying it to a different occupation. That's all. Yeah. So
same lens.
Yes. And it's also the thing that you can't like pick up and like OTs have to stick to what OTs have published. I don't think we need to do that, especially when we are talking about, say, sexuality, then it's everywhere. Nobody knows what they're doing. Nobody knows what they're talking about. So I think in such cases, when practitioners, and I mean, all the healthcare practitioners, urologists, andrologists, we are talking about gynecologists, obstetricians, psychiatrists, psychologists, everybody, whoever comes up with treatment methodologies or approaches which they have applied for a particular clientele, for a particular diagnosis, for a particular condition, it's nothing wrong to pick up from there. There are no boundaries as to, you can't do this because this it was not done by an OT.
Yes.
I don't think that's how research or anything works.
No.
It's been up there so that everybody can build on it, apply it, expand on it. If something works, doesn't work, it's a way of trying it, trial and testing everything. So I think this is a myth. And I mean, it's okay to like expand your horizons. You're going to need it anyway. Nothing is just OT. All you have to make sure is that you're not overstepping onto some other profession's work. That's
going
all.
Beyond your scope. Yes.
Yes. How,
and, you know, particularly because there, I'm sure there's not a lot of OT literature centered around sexuality.
Not really, but we're there. I mean, we're trying and we are getting the material out. And I'm also trying to do research better. So I don't know.
you're learning. Oh my gosh.
If I'm cut out for it, but yeah, until then, I think thanks to everybody else who is putting in the work and publishing those research papers. Thank you.
Well, you're already doing so much. You've already done so much. And I appreciate very much the time that you've spent with us, just sharing your path, sharing with us where you're at, being really candid about, you know, your specialty, how you got there, and kind of your approach to things. And I have nothing but respect for how you provide the services that you provide. Super thoughtful, super trauma-informed, right? Which is just key. And again, really looking at the big picture. So thank you so much, Dr. Sachi Tiku, for joining us from all the way across the globe.
I'm so glad. And I mean, just the takeaway, which is going to be a disclaimer, and you can put this. If anything I said, if you disagree with it, I get it. If you feel that I offended you in any way, I'm really sorry. That is never the intention that I come from. So it's, again, an opinion and an experience that has come from me and the way that I work. And again, it's my opinion. So you can take some of it, you can use some of it. And once again, sorry if anything I said was inappropriate, offended, hurtful. There was never the intention. That will never be the intention. So, and
well, thank you for that.
Do get inspired. And if any one of you get inspired, please know that you're in for the longer haul. It's not, it's just because it's sex does not mean it's like, wow and amazing. I mean, some bits are, but some bits are just very real about how people are suffering. They are struggling and how there's so much more responsibility on your shoulders because you can ruin somebody's life. And that's all that I think my very ending note would be. And thank you so much for having me here, Patricia, for doing what you do, because it's because of platforms like yours, voices can be heard across the globe and connections are made. People get influenced. I have no idea who might be listening to this or where they might be listening it to from. So thank you. Thank you.
Wow. Well, you're very welcome. I've been so excited to have you on because your message is super important to share. And I have a feeling that more of our listeners are the inspired kind versus the ones who were offended or, you know, offended by your message. I have a feeling that we have more of the inspired folks out there, again, people who have been waiting to hear this type of messaging, right? People who are also looking for some guidance. As an OT, a lot of these issues have come up in my conversations with clients, and and, you know, not really being sure how to respond, how to address. And I think, you know, it's important for us to, yeah, to kind of put our heads together to see like, okay, how can we as a profession really support this issue that, an occupation that can be disrupted, and, you know, what, how can we be of service?
Yes. And at the end of the day, the idea is to make the uncommon common. So,
yeah. So hopefully we've done our job here today.
Hopefully. Yes.
So thank you again. And if our listeners wanted to get in touch with you to connect, would that be okay?
Absolutely. There's a website, there's email. Instagram is a little doubtful, but you can try. But I think website and email are always there. And if you have anything that you want to learn about, Instagram is always like an open channel. I have posts, even though I'm a little busy right now posting actively. But it's still a very enriching place where I try to make bite-sized content that stays with you forever. So
yes,
you can read those posts. My website is, the blogs there are similar. It also, I have like two running, it's just one blog, but like there are two blog pieces which are like actively running, where I talk about reading lists for professionals, but also for people who are just actually curious about getting into some fiction, which talks about positive sexuality, relationships, and how the nuances can be. So I think it's just like a running list of books that I read. I update it every three, four months, or I take up suggestions. So if that is something you want a place to start reading about sexuality, please do it. I mean, there's definitely research papers, but there are also some really great textbooks, some really great authors around the world talking about it from so many aspects, right? From body image, to diversity, to transness, to recovering from, say, trauma, how grief plays a role in sexuality, just literally everything. So there's a lot of information. So I have tried to compile as much as I can, but I think the onus will always be on all of us to actually go ahead, search, and access these information, and not place the burden on any other therapist or any other practitioners. So please be a little mindful of that. And just don't go out and be like, oh, do you have any resources, without doing your research first.
Yeah,
I have some resources. So if at all you email me that, I'm not responding. I'm so sorry, but that's a boundary that I draw, because if you've landed on my website or Instagram, you should know there are resources linked up everywhere.
Yes.
I have an active, like a whole section of sexuality and OT resources. So it's not as if my website literally has everything.
It's robust. So it's a good word for your website.
It is. I swear, I mean, I take immense pride in my website, because it's something that I have constructed from the very beginning. Whatever happens there is something that I do, right? From designing to putting content in, everything is my work. So I take extreme and immense pride in that website, and I try to keep it as comprehensive as possible. So please do not come, if anybody sends me that email as to, I don't know what to do about this, sorry, I can't help you.
And so you heard that. You've been warned. But no, I believe I've seen your website. I've been on your website, and that's why I say it's robust. So anyone who is interested in exploring the type of work that you do in more detail, you have provided so much information. So thank you for being open to our listeners connecting with you. When you have time, of course, because you're just such a wealth of resource. And again, thank you so much.
Otherwise, any other queries, it do take a little while, but I always respond. If I can do it, if I can't do it, I do respond. And yes, emails are the best. Please send me an email. That works the best.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sachi.
Thank you so much, Patricia.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.